Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Tonight's share is broadcast live from the Lower East Side, and I wanted to spend some time discussing Megillas Rus, but there is not much time before Shavuos, so we know that we're not that far away. So it's time for us to gear up and understand a little bit about the intro, and hopefully we'll try to get through it as quickly as possible. Although I have been giving 1 or 1.5 minutes shiurim, so I have a little bit of leeway if you want to spend a little more time with me tonight. But I also have to get upstairs to my mom. I'm visiting her with some groceries. Every 2 days I go down to check up on her. So that's what we do. So Megillas Rus was written by Shmuel HaNavi, and it was at a time period that preceded Shaul HaMelech. So it was during the time of Shoftim. And during such a time period, we know in the first pasuk, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm going to just try to do it from heart, by heart. Vayi b'mei Shvot HaShoftim vayi rav ba'aretz vayelach ish mibeis lachim Yehuda lagur b'shtei Moav hu v'ishto shtei banav, or something to that effect. So we know that it says that there is two vayihis in that pasuk. There was a vayihi of b'mei Shvot HaShoftim that refers to a spiritual famine where the teachers were unable to communicate with the layman, the population, that is, and then vice versa. The population was not interested in receiving any instruction, any spiritual guidance or instruction from the rabbinic leadership. So there was a complete shutdown, basically in communication. The second vayihi means that there was a famine, literally a famine. So the Ben Ish Chai explains that Boaz in this week's parsha, in this week's parsha, I'm so used to saying this week's parsha, in the Megillah, leaves Eretz Yisrael, and everyone slams him and says, "How could you do such a thing? You know that, you know, Rashi tells us that he was a very wealthy man. The Medrash Rabbah tells us that his name Elimelech means a light of Ohamalchus. To me will come the kingdom," meaning that he was a very noble person, and he carried tremendous weight in terms of his prestige and his honor. He comes from the town of Beis Lechem Yehuda. Why Beis Lechem? We have to also understand that the word Lechem means food, but Milchama, which was the famine, people are at war in terms of trying to find, you know, scraps of food. We know that Milchama, the root word of Milchama, is Lechem, and surrounded by Mem and the Hey, which is that it means that it's difficult to make a livelihood. It's difficult to have a parnasa. And in that particular time period, even though people had parnasa, it didn't mean that they were entitled to any food. It still meant that the price was, you know, probably hyperinflation, like there was in Germany before World War II. So you can have all the money in the world, you could fill up wagons full of currency, and still only be able to purchase a few pounds of sugar and some flour and water, etc. So Elimelech leaves at a time when people need him. And Chazal and many people will point a finger and say that's unacceptable. But he had a reason, explains the Ben Ish Chai, and that is that he understood that the only way that we can hold on to Eretz Yisrael is if we are Shomer Torah u'mitzvos. Unfortunately, at that time, he was able to assess the situation and say, this is not a healthy environment, and there's no way that we're going to be able to keep the land of Israel because the people at the time were not listening to the rabbis. And so he decided to leave. And the irony in all of this is that Shmuel HaNavi writes Megillas Rus in order to codify the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is that Moavi v'lo Moavis. Now, I don't have time to go through the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, where the Gemara describes that when Shaul HaMelech sees David go out to face Goliath, he asks his army officer, Doeg and Doeg Adomi and others, "Who is this boy?" And they answer, "What do you mean, don't know who he is? He's the son of Yishai. Yishai commands 600,000 men. He's your army, he's your chief of staff. How could you not know?" No, I wasn't asking that question. I was asking, you know, is he from Peretz or is he from Zarach, Zarach. Well, what difference does that make? Well, it's obvious that if he is from Paritz, he's a threat to my kingdom. He'll take over my kingship. But if he's from Zarach, he'll just be a nobleman. I could deal with noblemen, but I don't want to deal with people that are trying to take away my authority. No. That's not what I was asking. What I was really asking, wait, says Doeg Adomi, I'll tell you what you really should be asking. What you think you should be at, what you are asking, what you should be asking, two different things. What you should be asking is he allowed to go into the community of the Jewish people? Why? Because he comes from Rus. And then a whole discussion ensues where they find themselves. Doeg Adomi goes into the Beis Medrash. He asks the question, is it permissible or not? And the answer is, it is permissible for us to marry the women, but not the men. Why? Because they did not bring out bread and water when we left Mitzrayim. Why is that an issue? Because we know that Rus, her father was Eglon. Eglon was a very obese man, but he stood up to hear the Dvar Hashem, and he was merited to have a successor like Rus, a holy neshama, which the Kedushas Levi says the entire purpose of Shavuos is to understand that they were at Matan Torah. There were many nefashos that were kavush, that were captured, and yet at Matan Torah, everything became evident that those who want to attach themselves to the Jewish people are free to do so. And the holiest, most powerful neshama of all was Rus. And that's when the nations of the world said, they went to Bilam when the Torah was given, and I'm going on the left field for a second, but I'm just going to do a quick Kedushas Levi. And they say, Hashem Lamal Yashav, like, what's going on over here? Is there going to be a flood? We hear a lot of trembling. This was at the time Matan Torah. Bilam says, no, Hashem Lamal Yashav, Hashem brought back the waters. So then the Maharsha brings down, is it a case of, is it fire that will consume us? Like, what is going on over here? No. Vayeshev Hashem restored the waters. And if that's the case, then what is this that's going on? So Bilam said that there's a tremendous, that there's a gift that's been hidden away for 974 generations before Bria Olam. We are now in the 1,000th generation since the creation of the Torah itself. And Hashem decided, after 1,000 generations, to deliver it to the Jewish people. The 26th generation is the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu. And you see that because from there were 10 generations until Noah, then another 10 until Avraham, and then you have Yitzchak, Yaakov, and then you have Levi, Amram, Moshe, and if you count it out, you'll get to 26. So that's how you come down to the 26th generation. And now that they've entered into the 26th generation, this is the time. And at that moment, the nations of the world said, they proclaimed in unison. Imagine the United Nations saying this today. Hashem oz la'amo yitain, Hashem yivarech es amo bashalom. We say this every Friday night. Hashem should give his nation strength, and Hashem should bless the Jewish people with strength. And it's they basically were saying that we don't want to be bothered by all of the mitzvahs, and the commandments are quite laborious for us. They're very challenging for us. It's enough for us to deal with seven. But to deal with another 606, that would be impossible for us. So, but if you found a candidate like the Jewish people that wants to take this on, then more power to them. And that's exactly where that phrase comes from. Hashem owes the Amo Yitain, Hashem should bless us with peace, with strength. Hashem Yivarech Es Amo Bashalom. Hashem should bless us with shalom. We know that the word shalom also refers to not just simply peace, it also means completeness, as we find in Yehoshua chapter 8, verse 31, where it talks about Evan Shlema, that it talks about a complete stone, and there's a reference there to completeness, and the same word is found. And that means that a person should be able to find wholesomeness, and not just simply peace. What does that mean? That I'm comfortable, I lay down, I go to sleep, and I don't. No, it means that whatever it is that you desire, it should be, so to speak, wholesome. You should have everything you need, and then so much more. So this is now we go back to the conversation. We just spoke about Eglon for a moment, and I deviated, and now I'm going back. Eglon's father, the Gemara Nazir Chav Gimel Amud Beis explains, is who? Balak, and Balak is a descendant of Moab. Balak Melech Moab. He comes from Moab, and who was Moab a descendant of? Lot, and who is Lot? Lot was the brother-in-law to Avram. His sister Sarah married Avram. And where was Lot all this time? He was sitting at the table of Avram. And every time we know that Avram had Rechosh Gadol. So he was a benefactor of all of Avram's kindness. Kindness begins in the home, as we say. So Lot was always a recipient of the goodness, the chesed that Avram represented, not just to the world, but to his immediate family as well. And how in the world could you not give the Jewish people bread and water? After all, it was Avram that sustained your ancestor Lot, who was the son of Haran, who joined Avraham but failed because he didn't come out alive of the Kivshan Ha'esh. But he gave Zchusim to Avraham Avinu because he basically eroded the power structure that Nimrod had put into place. So this is the genealogical background to Rus, and Al-Shalok Kidmu Aschem B'lechem. That's the reason why. So the Gemara says, well, wait a minute. It would be required for the men to serve the men, but why is it that the women are allowed to be married by Jewish men? Why aren't the women also required to have gone out to the field and provided food and drink to other women? There wouldn't be a tznius issue with that. It would be women helping other women. So what's the issue? The answer is, and this perhaps should be the title of the shiur, that when the angels asked Avraham Avinu, where is your wife? Ayesar Ishtacha. He answered with one word, Vayomer Hine Bohel. She is in the tent, or two words, I should say. She is in the tent. What does Unkelus say on the word Ohel? Mishkanei. She was in her Mishkan. We think about the Mishkan as being the holiest place on earth. But that, in fact, is the real root reason for Megillas Rus, to highlight the element of Tznius that is found with Sarah Imenu and in her Schus. That's the reason why we are able to take Rus into our family, all because of Sarah, Hinei Ba'ohel. That's the reason why. Because if the women would have gone out to the field, then we would have argued, the Gemara would have argued, that they're just as culpable as the men. But there is an exemption or an exception to this rule, because Vayomer Sar Yishtacha, Vayomer Hinei Ba'ohel, Ayei Sar Yishtacha, Vayomer Hinei Ba'ohel, she is in the tent. And that is the root reason why we call the Megillah Megillas Rus. By the way, as a joke, I'm just going to deviate for a quick sec. About many years ago, one of my supervisors asked me, what do I do on this holiday? And I told him I didn't know what to say. So I said that we read the book of Ruth. He turned to me and he said, you know, I don't have that book in my house. Perhaps that's why they call me ruthless. Now, it sounds funny, but at the same time, there's a lot of truth to every joke. And if you really want to get to understand the root nature of ruthless, nobody has to give you a broader definition than any single movie out there since the beginning of time. That any so we all know that that is part and parcel of most action movies, is there one guy who's always ruthless. But if you want to know what Ruth represented, who she was as a person, the Imre Emes explains that when Almanos go out to the field, they're entitled to 2 bushels of wheat. No, I'm sorry. Poor people that go out to the field are entitled to leket shechan peah, and that usually involves 2 bushels of wheat. And so Rus, when she was out in the field, she collected 2 bushels of wheat. However, she was also an almana, so she was entitled to 1 additional bushel. So she did not collect that when everyone else was there. She waited for all the women to go back into their homes, and then when it was quiet and nobody knew, she went out to the field and collected her 3rd bushel. Why? So as not to aggravate other people, not to raise an eye, so that other people should create machlokas about something as trivial as this. And so there are countless examples, and I'll just give you a gra. The gra explains in the second parak that Rus worked in the field all day, and when someone works in the field all day, much like somebody working at a desk or in construction, or they're running around in their car, so they don't have food with them. Right? So what do? So Rus did not touch a morsel of food. And she waited until it was late at night. And she sat down at the table of Boaz. By the name Boaz, by the way, comes from the name Boaz. Here comes strength. And the strength is that Boaz understood, unlike Ploni Almoni, who did not take up the opportunity to marry Rus, because he was afraid that by doing so, he would lose his Yerusha. Why? Because he was unfamiliar with the rule of that it's Moavi velo Moavis, that the prohibition is against the men and not the women. So he was not learned. His name was Tov, and then it turned to Ploni Almoni, as if to say he became like a nobody, like a Joe Schmo, Ploni Almoni. So Boaz, who comes from Shevet Yehuda, the most pious tribe, marries Rus, who comes from one of the questionable tribes, but only to those that were not learned. For those that were learned, it was obvious. And I deviated for something, and now I'm trying to recall where I was going with that one, but that's okay. Let's just go back to the messaging that I'm trying to hone in on, and that is that. Where in the world would we ever come to see a Rus, if not for Elimelech making a bold move the way he did by leaving, knowing in advance, Ezo Chacham Aruos HaNolad, that we weren't able to hold on to Eretz Yisrael back in the day because we were not Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Boaz saw the writing on the wall and he left. Would Rus be able to just simply walk into Bnei Brak and say, "Hi, I'd like to get married. I'm looking for someone from Shevet Yehuda. Anybody want to marry me?" So, I mean, I cannot imagine something like that ever occurring. But David HaMelech said it best. He said, "Arov abdecha l'tov, al yashkuni zedim." That let my guarantors, Arov abdecha l'tov, that my guarantors turned out for good. Let not my naysayers have any footing. What do my guarantors refer to? My guarantors are my ancestors, such as Boaz and Rus, or specifically Elimelech. And David HaMelech also said, Tov li taras picha, me'al fezav v'kesef. That is a song, but it's also the root of Megillas Rus, because your words are more valuable to me, Tov li taras picha, that it's better for me, the Torah of your mouth, me'al fezav v'kesef, than thousands of gold and silver coins and other fabulous looking jewelry. It means nothing, nothing if you were not be able to accept me into the fold of the Jewish people. Says the Ben Ish Chai, the word arov, if you turn it around, is also ra'av. It's the same letters. Ayin resh beis is also resh ayin beis. Is ra'av abdecha l'tov, that the famine turned out to me, your servant, for good. Al yashkuni zedim, let not my naysayers have any footing. So the first explanation of that is arov, let my guarantors turned out for me for good. He is referring to, in that case, it to his ancestors, Boaz and Rus. And Boaz is doing yibum for Elimelech, his first cousin. But in the second explanation by the Ben Ish Chai, it's the opposite. He's saying that the Ra'av, specifically the fact that the Jewish people were not behaving sometimes, and my great ancestor Elimelech made a bold move by leaving, that turned out for good. Because look, I am here. And I will just close out with something fascinating from also the Ben Ish Chai, where he says that it is a miracle we all recognize and appreciate. To bring children into the world is no small feat. And that is something we have to always cherish and acknowledge and just be makatov. Makatov, to be thankful. However, to bring Mashiach into the world is very, very challenging because the Satan does not want that to ever happen. And the Satan has a few moments in the Jewish calendar where he is confused. One of those examples is when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Now I know that we're not that far away, believe it or not. I can't believe I'm saying that from Rosh Hashanah, but we know that when we blow the shofar, he cowers under the table because he feels that Mashiach's on its way. And that's the moment when the Gabbai says, don't speak. From the time you hear the bracha of the shofar until the tail end of the last Kaddish. Why? Because if you were to speak, you create static. What kind of static? You have an opportunity to have a direct contact and communication with Hashem. Why would you squander such a precious time by speaking to your friends and neighbors about the Met game or the Yankee game or the Ranger game, etc.? You are far better suited to take advantage of your time and be quiet and daven. And the other time is when we look at Avraham Avinu was born to a father who was a chief idolater of his day, Terach, and his mother, the Gemara brings down, was Anida. So the Satan said, what in the world can come of this man? Nothing. Nothing good. So I have nothing to worry about Avraham Avinu. And then Yitzchak, when he was born, he initially was conceived as a Nekeva, but within 40 days, he turned into a Zachar, which is why the Gemara Anida explains that until 40 days, a parent can daven for the biological sex of a child, whichever one they want. The irony about that is that when it comes to parents, they sometimes will daven for something like this. But for a grandparent, it's an anical. They don't care if it's a boy or a girl. They've lived through life and they just say, I have anaklach. And they don't differentiate between boys and girls. Sometimes parents, when they're young, they make silly decisions. But anyway, we go back. Yaakov marries two sisters. That's a problem. Because before Matan Torah, it's not an issue, but afterwards it could be one. And v'chulei v'chulei, we look at Lot and his daughters. It took place in the Ma'ara, right? We took a look at Boaz and Rus, and they met on the Goren, which is what they define as the threshing floor, where they harvest all the wheat. So the Ben Ish Chai brings down that the by Yehuda and Tamar, it was at a place called Petach Einayim. By Rus and Boaz, it was at a place called the Goren. By Lot and his daughters, it was a place called Me'ara, the cave. The Rashi Tevos of Petach Einayim, Goren, and Me'ara is Pagam, flaw. It means that the only way for these unique circumstances in Jewish history to unfold the way they did had to be through a flaw in order to confuse the Satan. And I'll close out with a story from Rabbi Yaakov Emden. He said one time that the Jewish German financiers, if they're not Shomer Shabbos, there's no way that they can be Shomer your money. They can't be holding their fiduciary responsibilities intact if they can't even keep Shabbos. Now, four of them were very upset about what he had to say. And they complained to local priests, which back in those days in Mecklenburg in Germany, it wasn't hard for the priest to issue a ruling. And they said, well, what is it that would really get this guy upset? Oh, take away his Rabbi Yaakov Emden sitter. You know that today we have a publication of Rabbi Yaakov Emden sitter. So you know already by the end of the story, it didn't come to pass. But what happened? They came in, ransacked the house. They threw everything apart looking for a sitter. They couldn't find it. Do you know where it was? It was right in front of him and right in front of all of them. But where was it? It was in the garbage. And in the garbage, he covered it with plastic. He covered it with some protective gear, and he put schmaltz herring and Allah get the zachen from Shabbos, the challen, the schmaltz herring, everything. You throw off the table, you get rid of all that stuff, the chazrai that you want to throw away. No, that's what covered his book. And they didn't look inside. You know why? Because they would never go to a place like that. You want to keep your jewelry safe? Where are you going to put it? In a jewelry box? You think that's a safe place? That's the first place they look. So where did Rabbi Yaakov Emden put his jewels, his sitter that he loved so much? In the garbage. Not that you should do that with your jewelry, but I'm just trying to give point that in order to confuse a satan, it has to be in a place that he would never look. It has to be in a place that he would never consider something like that would happen. We close out tonight's shiur by moving to the fourth parak, even though we opened it with one pasuk, we move to the fourth parak. And in the fourth parak, it says that Al Kain, therefore, you shall raise up this house. They say to Rus and to Boaz that you will raise up this house and you will build it like Rachel and Leah that built Klal Yisrael. Why a reference to them? Because until that point, the world had no idea the merit of Yaakov marrying Rachel and Leah. They all castigated and they said terrible things. How could you marry two sisters? The Torah says it's not right. And that was necessary in order to raise Klal Yisrael. And then the pasuk continues by saying that Tamar and Yehuda, there's a reference to them. Why? Because up until that point, the world, even sometimes today, people denigrate what happened with Tamar and Yehuda, and they say, how in the world could Yehuda act like this? They have no idea who they're talking about. Yehuda was 10,000 times greater than the greatest Kohen, Aaron HaKohen. He was Yehuda. That was Yehuda. He was Yehuda Tzaddik. So, and then all of this is meant to come one full circle to say that now the Zera of Mashiach is in the world. And Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, we should be able to welcome Mashiach Tzidkenu very, very soon, because Hashem knows we really need a Yeshua to come in the nearest time frame. I want to wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for listening to my half-hour shiur, compensating for the prior 2 weeks where we did 10 minutes. And everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.